You know the vibes. Welcome back to another episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K25. It's myself, Moments, alongside me as always, the three-time NBA champion, Mr. BJ Armstrong, and the general manager extraordinaire, Mr. Scott Perry, here on a Monday, as we do. How's your weekend, fellas?
Man, weekend was great. You know, BJ, I was going to ask you something. You notice here as of late, Mo's, you know the vibes. Mm-hmm. He's not holding that note as long anymore. What's going on? Is Mo, you getting a little older on us or what? Oh, <that's>
By the time's undefeated. Nah, you know, I'm just waiting for the playoffs to come around. You know, I'm just waiting for the playoffs and, you know, waiting for the finals and then I'm waiting for the championship parade. You know what I'm saying? I can't be bringing the vibes too heavy too early. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. I listen, Mo. I listen. I pay attention.
I appreciate that. What I would like to do is wish all of our listeners a happy Ramadan to everyone out there who's observing a month and fasting. So I ain't going to be talking too much now, fellas, because I can't be drinking no nut and soda. So I'm going to leave up to you guys. Okay. And where I wanted to start with on this episode was a report by our friend Chris Haynes that came out this week.
Right.
And it was to do with the Phoenix Suns and in particular coach Mike Budenholzer and his relationship with Devin Booker, because Chris reported that Mike Budenholzer told Devin Booker to tone down his voice and Devin Booker was shocked by that, both on the court and off the court. I don't understand really what that means. Because my understanding of basketball is it's better to communicate than to not communicate, and you want your best players picking up a leadership role. But I'm going to leave this with you guys, and I want to get your reaction, because this news came out on Friday, and it's Monday, and Mike Budenholzer still has a job, which is kind of surprising to me, especially considering where the Phoenix Suns are in the standings as well, as they remain in that 11th spot with the Portland Trailblazers just one game behind them. But what was your reaction to hearing this? And have you ever seen something like this before in the NBA where a coach is telling his star player to stop talking?
Offhand, I can't recall that, Mo. Now, look, there's obviously, you know, frustrations come to the surface when you're losing a lot of basketball games, like the Phoenix Suns have been this season, especially with the highest payroll in the entire NBA, frustrations are high. And on the one hand, it's good, at least for me to hear where I sit, that there's a player like a Devin Booker who is vocal. Now, again, I don't know what he's saying, but being vocal, I'm assuming to implore the team, his teammates, even employ, you know, get himself going, because we live in an era where you don't have a lot of leadership being taken by players as much as they are by the coaches. And, you know, BJ played in the era that, you know, every team that leadership came from within that locker room with the players. I mean, they, you know, BJ played for a great coach, outstanding coach. But that leadership emanated amongst those players. And you want that. You want your players to be passionate about what's going on. So, again, I don't know all the particulars that led to this. But I do know that when there's a lot of losing going on, there's a lot of frustration, especially for a team that had such high expectations. And you got three star players on that same team in Durant, Booker, and Bill, and it hasn't worked out. Coach Budenholzer was brought in to turn this thing around because last year they underachieved. And so many people, me included, felt his presence was going to be an upgrade for this Phoenix basketball team, and it has not panned out yet. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens as we move through the remainder of this season and into the offseason. Unfortunately, what I see from where I sit, there's probably a lot of change on the horizon in that Phoenix organization, both on and off the court.
Mr. Armstrong, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, my immediate thought was we have to get Mr. Chris Haynes, the great Chris Haynes, on the show to explain himself. These, you know, sometimes we'll see things in their reports that, you know, it's like, okay, we're always encouraging players to communicate. We're always encouraging to talk. Just like Scott just elaborated here, when you have players, especially your star players, when they're vocal, that's an indication because they care. And it is your job in the one of these leadership positions, like a head coach, like a general manager, to channel that energy and use it in a positive direction. So it was one of those things that didn't sound right. And as they say, where there's smoke, there's fire. And it appears to be that something is not right there in Phoenix. Now, we're not in the locker room, so we don't know everything. But it's fair to say this. By their payroll, it's fair to assume that they are expected to win. By the players that they currently have on their team, all-stars, Olympians, we expected them to win. And by the coaching change.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Frank Vogel was there, and all of a sudden they come in with Budenholzer, who is a championship-level coach. So the expectations are fair here. And now what is really going on? So I think this summer we should all expect them to probably do something to stir up the pot, and we'll see. And they have a team with their version of a big three. And I think it's pretty safe to say that, you know, that team as is, you know, I expect some changes. Well, and I expect some things to move forward.
Sham said on ESPN last night that this summer, unless the Suns somehow make a playoff run, everything is on the table, with the exception that Devin Booker is never being traded, according to his sources at the Phoenix Suns. Which is just interesting to me. You know, I've been thinking about this a lot recently. And I say a lot now. It just crossed my mind the other day. it sounded better when I said I've been thinking about it a lot. You know, when you're the Phoenix Suns, right? You are kind of a team who was down bad for a real long time, right? You weren't relevant in the NBA. You draft Booker, you draft DeAndre Ayton, you've got these guys, Bridges and Johnson and so on and so forth. You make a run to the NBA Finals, right? And, you know, you win the first two games of the Finals. Next season, you're the clear-cut number one seed in the Western Conference. Fair enough, you get punked by Luka Doncic in the Game 7. But, you know, you're dominating the Western Conference for the majority of that season. And then you have the ownership change. You blow it all up for Kevin Durant. And you get Kevin Durant and Booker. And that's a great pairing. And then later on, you blow that up. And then you want to bring in Bradley Beal. Do you think, hypothetically, if the Phoenix Suns had just kept that team that made it to the NBA Finals together and gave them a chance to run it back, what kind of position do you think they'd be in compared to the position the team is currently in now?
Mo, are you playing the hypothetical game? Because it's really...
Because hypothetical is the only place that the Suns are going to pick up some wins.
Exactly. It's really hard to tell. Normally, when you go to a finals, win or lose, I mean, I know our philosophy was, especially in Detroit, you're always going to try to tweak your team a little bit. Obviously, you're good enough to ascend to get to that final series. But again, win or lose, you're always looking to add, because you know all your competitors, the other 29 teams, are going to be doing the same thing, or you at least you assume they're going to be doing the same thing come the offseason. So what I will say about that team that went to the finals, there was a lot of balance on that team. Probably was a deeper team. They chose to go a direction to bring together three star players with extremely high salaries which then hamstrings your ability to build a deep team. So now, as we're having this discussion, consider the facts. What are the facts in front of us? The team that had more depth, you had an ascending star in Devin Booker, you had a solid center in Ayton, you had great role players in Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson. You had guys coming off your bench. That team, again, had some depth. Probably just needed to add another piece or two to that just to see how far they could go. But again, I'm never mad at a team pivoting and thinking, okay, this is our way to go. We want to go with three-star players. But there's a price to pay, as we see now, and especially in this new cap area with the first and second aprons. Your ability to get better and improve your team around those high-salary players is extremely limited. So now you're Phoenix, you're sitting in 11th place, probably going to miss the play-in altogether. Now you've got really one way to go. There's no retooling what you have now. You're really going to have to go in like a surgeon and start repairing a lot of parts to this organization to hopefully get back in a competitive place in the Western Conference, because a lot of these teams in the Western Conference, as we see, aren't going anywhere. They're younger teams. The top team in the conference is a younger team in OKC. We've talked about the Houston Rockets a lot, a younger team that's on the ascension. So the Minnesota Timberwolves are a younger team. The Memphis Grizzlies are a younger team. So you have a lot of those teams in place now with your and established guys are going to be around for a couple more years. We see the Lakers are playing tremendous in the Western Conference. We see Golden State, once they've acquired Jimmy Butler, is ascending up the conference ladder. So there's not a lot of places to go. San Antonio had a younger team, even though Wembanyama is out now. So your hands are full over in that Western Conference, and Phoenix has a lot of work in front of them right now, because things, and I'm just stating the obvious, aren't going very well, and there has to be a lot of change that's got to be made there to give yourself a chance to start yourself back on the upward trajectory if you're Phoenix.
Yeah, it's tough with a new owner who comes in and wants to win immediately, and he's treating it like it's NBA 2K with just, you know, these trades, trying to get the players he wants. BJ, when it comes to the coaching of this team, you know, Monty Williams did a great job, you know, on the court while he was there, getting that team to the NBA Finals and so on and so forth. But he also, you know, kind of alienated their number one draft pick in DeAndre Ayton. This week, Jay Crowder was talking about that he never actually wanted to leave Phoenix, and it's because of his disagreement with Monty Williams that he left. So they replaced him with Frank Vogel, who did okay, I guess. I think his record was 49-33 as coach. They wanted someone who was a little bit stronger defensively as a coach, and they went out and got Mike Budenholzer, who coached the Bucks to the win over the Phoenix Suns in the NBA Finals when they met back in 2023. But it's clear that Mike Budenholzer coaching this team is not the right move for the organization. If the one player you want to keep hold of is Devin Booker, and Budenholzer, based on the report that Chris Haynes put out, Budenholzer's alienating Devin Booker, who is the right coach for this team, and what direction can they realistically go in? Because realistically, if Bradley Beal don't want to uproot his family and leave, he can stay. Realistically, they'll probably trade Kevin Durant, but you're still going to be stuck with Booker and Beal, which is taking up 50% of your salary cap. So your roster is pretty much set. I don't see any big name free agents queuing up to go to Phoenix after the way things have gone. What direction can they go in here?
Well, if I remember correctly, I think they have a lot of commitment to Frank Vogel, what they committed to him as far as years and their contract. And then if I remember correctly, and you correct me if I'm wrong, Mo, I think Budenholzer signed for like 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point here, you have to honor these commitments and decisions that have made. Okay. Like at some point, I don't care who you are. So let's stop there. Right now, Budenholzer is the coach. They have a lot of money committed to their players, even though to their players, in particular, three players that they're committed to. So now they're going to have to figure out how to make this work. It's plain as simple as that. Until Bradley Beal, as Scott, you know, shared with us, there's only two players that have a no trade. <That's right. laughs> And Bradley Beal is one of them. Okay, so the only thing that we can, you know, based on the reports, Devin Booker isn't going anywhere. And Kevin Durant, that's the only logical thing that we can now move forward today. So I think the Phoenix Suns are in a position where they're going to have to figure this out and make it work with the people that are currently there in the locker room. Because you've committed to people financially. That's just what it is. Like, it is what it is with this group. They're a young group. You know, if let's say an executive was there, the first thing, let's look at what's their draft picks. I don't think they have a draft pick until like
2031.
Yeah. 2031. No. Okay. Yeah. So what's their draft capital? What's their situation? What's their books? So let's bring someone in that has the capability to clean up their books. And the only option that I see is to build a team and say, hey, this is going to get a little rocky here for the next several years. We're going to have to withstand the process, and then we'll see how we come out of it 3, 4, 5 years from today. Because how are you going to build a team with no draft picks?
Right.
All your, you know, Kevin's what, 30? He's got to be 35, 36.
36, or something. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
35, 36.
Mm-hmm.
Devin Booker is in his prime. He's ready to win now. You know, you're going to have to convince him that, hey, how are we going to match this or piece this around you and allow you to win, because he is an elite player, all-star caliber player. And then we have a player, what, he has, what, 2 more years left on this deal after this year.
Right. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So that's what it is. And at some point, we have to find someone, right? And maybe that someone is already in the building. I don't talk about people's jobs. I never want to see people get fired. But someone's going to have to sit in front of the microphone, because the microphone is hot, and say, this is what it is. There's no way to dance around it. We're going to have to build through it. And our players are committed to this process. And we're asking our fan base now to move forward. Because if you don't have a draft pick until 2000, what'd you guys say, 31 or something?
Mm-hmm. 6 years.
Scott, from now. How are you going to build a team?
No.
Without it. So I'm not here to dance around it. I'm just going to say, this is what it is. Phoenix, it's going to get a little rocky, but you're going to have to find superior leadership that's willing to go through this process. Right. And then hopefully you come out on the other side with your books clean and players who are committed to being there, and you move from that point.
You know, and BJ, in touch, I want to add something to that, where Phoenix sits right now, you know, and I'm looking from an executive standpoint. You know, how the Kevin Durant situation was handled leading up to the trade deadline is not helpful either moving forward, because now the entire league knows that this offseason, the Kevin Durant is going to want to move on, and the team is kind of stated that they were open to trading him. But what they may have been able to get for him at the deadline is probably going to be less now this offseason, because everybody knows there's a breakup coming now. And this is the byproduct of when things aren't handled in the right way, or and a trade doesn't happen then during that before the deadline like that. This, you know, if I'm an imposing executive, yeah, I want Kevin Durant. Don't get me wrong. I was part of the front office that drafted Kevin Durant. I know him, have tremendous respect for him as a player. He's one of the all-time greats. So I would want that type of talent in my locker room. However, with that being said, I'm going to put a limit on how much I'm going to offer, because, A, there's only going to be a few teams that can trade for him anyway because of his big salary. And there's going to be restrictions there because of the second apron that Phoenix is under. So it's going to be, you know, a handful of teams when it really gets down to it. And to BJ's point, one of the most important things now to get back for him is going to be dealing with a team that has the most draft capital. You're not going to get the equal level of talent back, but let's make sure that we get some draft capital and maybe be able to, add another, with them being the second apron, they can't even aggregate anybody. So let me back off of that. So anyway, it makes it difficult. It makes it difficult.
Hold on. Can I say something? Because I've been waiting to talk about the Phoenix Suns this morning.
I know, because this is what I was going to ask you, a specific question about the Phoenix Suns.
I can't contain myself. Okay. Because the only thing that matters for me with the Phoenix Suns is the following. We're talking about Kevin Durant and when Bradley Beal and Devin Booker and Coach Bud and all these teams. But I need an answer. Why is Bol Bol? I need someone to explain to me why is Bol Bol not, playing consistently throughout this entire season? Then I need an explanation. Now, I'm on this mission now, Mo, because I know his agent, Thad Fouché, who is his agent. I need all of the coaches, just one, but please contact us here at Hoop Genius Podcast. We need Kevin Durant and others. You don't have to come on. We prefer you to come on, but just tell us why Bol Bol is not consistently playing, because Bol Bol is a player. I don't know what he is. I can't say I've seen players like him before, Scott, but I need someone to explain to me, because Bol Bol
You and Shaq are in agreement on Bol Bol. Loves talking about Bol Bol.
Shaq's
a fan of the podcast. I'll tell you that, Scott.
Yes.
Shaq stays listening to the show.
Okay, good. That's awesome.
I'm going to now. Shaq and others, I just need to know now. I'm on a mission here for the remainder of the season. Anyone is allowed who's worked with Bol Bol to come on the show. It's an open invitation, because Bol Bol is a player. I watched that man play the other night. That man had like 25 points. I don't know what he did last night. I know they lost.
It wasn't great last night.
Yeah, is it?
He had 9 points.
He needs to play at least 30 minutes, and he needs to consistently be incorporated into the offensive scheme. So I'm on a mission now. It's official. Bol Bol, Mo. Hey. Okay, everyone knows that, so here's a secret. Wimby is my favorite. Well, I'm going to tell you guys right now, Bol Bol is right there now. He's right there for me. Now, I'm saying it. I'm on a Bol Bol mission. Bol Bol is like, Scott, Mo, he does things that I just find so intriguing. He is the most fascinating player to me because of his skill set. So he's right there now. I have two favorite players, Bol Bol and Wembanyama.
That's fair. I think talent-wise, Wembanyama still has a significant advantage. But I see what you're saying with Bol Bol. This is how long we've been doing the podcast is BJ managed to move on to the Bol Bol topic before I even asked him the question about it.
Exactly.
What I was going to say is, talking about the Phoenix Suns, BJ always says on his show, the only way he's to improve is through the draft, through free agency or trade, or through developing the talent you've got in-house. And one would think in the situation that the Phoenix Suns are in, that the 25-year-old Bol Bol, who's not really had a chance for a steady shot in this league at any stop yet, along with Brian Dunn, who's your draft pick that you used, and he was playing, I think he was even starting some games, and he was playing great minutes to begin the season.
Yeah.
And then I don't know what happened. Now he's not getting the same kind of run and the same kind of opportunity. So it's interesting to you know, that they're not utilizing these young guys. But Scott, as an executive and someone who puts these rosters together, if you were looking at Bol Bol, which situation around the league do you think would suit him the best? Because BJ wants to know why he's not playing here. And well, you've got Booker, KD, and Beal who all want the ball in their hands, who all want touches. I can see why this team is not catered to the development of Bol Bol without taking the ball away from the other guys that are going on. So where around in the league would you want to see Bol Bol really get a shot to develop as a player?
It's a good question. There's a number of places. And the tough thing before I answer this is that I don't know Bol Bol. I haven't met him, so I don't know what his personality is like. And that oftentimes is key. My guess, because he's bounced around a little bit in the NBA, and for whatever the reason, he hasn't put his feet in cement anywhere and they say, this is my place. And it appears to be there's been no coach that has really put their arms around him and say, hey man, this guy, they look at him as a piece of clay that they can mold into a tremendous talent. Because look, we're in a league now that loves length, that loves skill. He has them both. And he can shoot the basketball some, and he's a highly skilled player. So I would lean towards a place where maybe a place like Sacramento, where an offensive organization, you got a first-time head coach in Doug Christie, who's a former player, but who the guys seem to like playing for. Maybe that's a place where can help continue his development. Because I think that's what he really needs is somebody putting their arm around him. Let's face it. Let's look at the job at our hometown, the Detroit Pistons, that JB Bickerstaff is doing. So obviously he's done a good job at working with young players and getting them to buy in. And now their team is a little more fully formed to me than Sacramento is. But as a guy that's a second unit skill scorer for the Pistons, maybe they could look down that path. But from a skill perspective, he fits a lot of places. It's to me, it's just going to get down to the personality of the coach, personality of the locker room for a guy like this to find a place he can really call home and then can establish the type of consistency that BJ is talking about, because that's what has eluded him to this point for whatever the reasons may be, which I don't know, and not privy to, but with that type of ability, he is definitely worth someone who is committed, who sees that and committed to him and is willing to live with some of the growing pains and or mistakes that he may make on the basketball floor, because his presence overall could be a positive for your team because of his ability to make plays on the offensive end and provide you some defensive ability as well too, being able to utilize his length and ability to protect the rim and be a switchable player on the perimeter. So be interesting to watch him. For his sake, I just hope he finds a home where he's embraced and he can embrace him back. And I think then you will see the best of Bol Bol at that time.
In the games where he's playing over 24 minutes, he's averaging around 19 points, 7 rebounds, and 3 blocks, along with 4 steals, but 6 turnovers is kind of the worrying part. I think a lot of this from watching the Suns, it comes down to Mike Budenholzer's rotations. He's kind of setting his ways and he's trying to give everyone minutes. And it's almost like they promised Tyus Jones if he signed there, because remember, they signed Tyus Jones there for a lot less money than what everyone expected Tyus Jones to get. They must have promised him a certain amount of minutes. And so that skews the rotation. And you have to try and balance things like that. So hopefully this summer, he can get somewhere where he can really develop his game.
Chauncey Billups is another guy, another coach that would be good for me that would embrace the development side to a player. And that's a team that needs talent. And maybe a place like that can get him the kind of consistent minutes that he needs as well, too. So.
Well, this is another team I wanted to talk about because they went to overtime with the Cavaliers last night. Obviously, Donovan Mitchell wasn't playing, but the Portland Trailblazers have been doing pretty well. And as I said at the start of the show, they're just one game behind the Phoenix Suns in the standings. And if you had said that at the start of the season, I don't think there's anyone on earth who would have believed you, because a lot of people predicted the Trailblazers to be at the very bottom, and a lot of people expected the Suns to be somewhat competitive. But what have you seen from the Portland Trailblazers? BJ, you love the 7 footers. You must be loving what you see from Donovan Clingan out there for the Trailblazers.
You know, well, they have a lot of young talent. Hopefully, I'm pronouncing his name right. It's the kid from Washington, Avid. How do you pronounce his name? The kid,
Avia, Denny Avia.
yes, Avia. You know, he has really blossomed there. I don't know what he, you know, I kind of briefly watched that game last night. Looked like he was playing well in that game. Klingem, I thought that was a terrific pick in the draft. Aiden, you guys know, you know, the 7 footers. This kid's sharp, Simons, you know, and others that are that are there, you know.
I think Kamara as well, who was traded by the Phoenix Suns as part of the DeAndre Ayton deal, has become one of the most impactful defenders in the entire NBA. And
Yeah, I
he's
mean,
starting games for them.
so yeah, so they have rotational players, okay. So you could see what they're doing. They're putting together quality athletes, capable players, rotational players at the very least. And now all of a sudden you're seeing these young people blossom under Chauncey Billups. You know, Chauncey has really kind of found his niche. He's found his voice. And it takes time, well, since he's gotten the job. So I want to give, you know, Coach Billups credit and now what they're doing there. And now they are beginning to compete. Okay, when you see teams start to compete on the road like they did last night versus, you know, arguably the best team in the league, you're starting to say, okay, we're moving, we're trending in the right direction. So I like this team. I like what the Portland Trail Blazers are doing. I like how they're playing. They're playing the right way. And right now, you're saying possibly, you know, you look at the Pistons. You look at the Pistons, you know, just a year ago now, they were on a 28-game losing streak. And all of a sudden now, the Pistons turn it around. What this could be. You know, so the big offseason, the commitment or big offseason decision they have to make is which one of these guys are they going to retain? Because now they have the ability now to really build, but who are they going to build around? And they have a lot of options. So, you know, good for the Portland Trailblazers. They've had some, you know, some tough years since Damian Lillard has gone or said left. At least they haven't, you know, been in the playoffs. But now they're trending now, and I like what I see. I like where they're going, and they could have very easily won that game last night, and that says a lot about where the organization has gone just from a year ago. And that's a big, you're beginning to be competitive, and when you see your team begin to be competitive on the road, that means you now have a team that, I dare say, Scotty, they're professional. They're beginning to play at a professional level. And that, to me, is very, very positive.
Let me just add a little bit to this Portland Trailblazers group. And obviously, I'm going to focus on Chauncey Billups, who I've known since he was 16 years old, recruited the young man when he was an outstanding high school player coming out of Denver, Colorado. And Chauncey, even back then, had a lot of what I would call just natural leadership skills about him. And then you fast forward, very successful collegiate career, very high draft pick. And boy, then he hits a real obstacle in adversity when he gets drafted by Boston. Wasn't a fit for him. And then now he bounces around the league for five different places till he gets to his sixth team, being the Detroit Pistons, and then boom, Hall of Fame career. I mention all that because I really believe that has helped shaped his coaching and the way he can message a number of these players. He's been a top guy, so he can talk to your star players. And he's been that guy that maybe was questioning going home some nights after he was his fourth or fifth team, saying, okay, am I going to be able to stick in the league? And he fought through all that. He continued to get better, develop himself. And I just think when you have someone who's persevered that way, and is bringing that type of experience, and along with his natural leadership ability, you see that starting to really resonate with this ball club, particularly a younger ball club. And I just hope that he continues to be able to see this thing through, because I think he's going to, I feel strongly that Chauncey, and I'm not just saying that because of my personal relationship, I really do feel strongly that Chauncey has an opportunity, a chance to become one of the better coaches in this league. If he's, you know, as long as you continue to allow him to grow, give him some more talent, because BJ said a key word, they have some very good rotational talent on that team right now. You know, a couple of guys that are, you know, probably starters. They don't have the high end talent that some of the other teams in the Western Conference have to this point. But that's not deterring him from going out there and believing, getting this team to believe that they can win if they execute, play tough, defend, things that we're starting to see this ball club do.
Yeah, well, they will be receiving a top 14 draft pick. They'll be getting a lottery pick in the draft this year to kind of add to that stockpile of talent with some very exciting players in the NBA draft. And you never know how that draft lottery is going to go. Do you see any star potential with perhaps a Donovan Clingan or even a Scoot Henderson, who's started to find his feet in the league as of late?
Obviously, I think I see Donovan Clingan as a very good starting center in this league, because he has the size, he has the ability to protect the rim, things that we know to be very important in today's game.
He's sneaky and good passer as well.
Yeah, and he passes the ball. Still developing as an offensive player. You know, a lot of teams don't play through the low post with a true back-to-basket player, but I believe they will continue to work on that with him, even if he can just develop one or two moves in that low post. That will come in handy, in particular, come playoff time. So I really like him. He's a building block for that team. I like that. Scoot Henderson is still a work in progress, in my opinion. He's, you know, I know he came from that G League Ignite, very athletic. But as BJ can tell you, because he played the position for over a decade in the NBA, it's just like an NFL quarterback. Being a point guard, that's the toughest position to grow into and adapt to at that level. Because not only do you have to know and understand the intricacies of your position, of the point guard position, and what you have to do to be successful playing that position, but you got to understand all the other four positions on the court as well, too, and how to make people better and how to be able to lead from that position. And again, I may be sounding a little old school, because that was the expectation for every point guard that stepped on the floor, that you were the leader of the team, you were leader of the offense and defense. So that, I believe, is still very much a work in progress for a guy like Scoot Henderson. He has a lot of physical tools, but he's got to continue picking up the nuance of the position and gaining the confidence of those around him, that not only can he go get his own, but can he make guys around him better? And I think that's going to be the big thing that I've got to watch with him moving forward.
Yeah, and they've got the, you know, the flexibility to make some moves this summer. You know, they've got Jerry Grant, who's under contract for, I think, four more years or three more years after this one. They've got Rob Williams, you know, and a bunch of guys that can be moved. So it's going to be interesting. Just another team trying to improve over there in that Western Conference while the Phoenix Suns continue to free fall. So I'm going to keep an eye. PJ, what else has been catching your eye from around the NBA this weekend?
Well, yeah, you know, there's a few things that caught my eye, you know. But here's the thing, guys, that really caught my eye. I watched the other night. I watched our good friend for the New Orleans Pelicans play.
Mr. Zion Williamson.
Okay. Now, I just want to make sure that we get this together. I think this was on Thursday night. I watched Zion play against the Phoenix Suns. Mm-hmm. Zion played 31 minutes. He had 27 points, 10 rebounds, and 10 assists.
Okay? Two blocks. And did it on 77% shooting.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. Now I watched that game and I was like, wow, okay. Then all of a sudden, They played, and now Scott, you know, these back-to-back games, right? New Orleans played the Phoenix Suns the next night in Phoenix, okay? And then I read the report, Zion now, he didn't have to travel. They stayed right there in Phoenix. He plays 31 minutes, has his first triple-double, and I'm standing there going, wow, okay, hey, you know, body looks good, Scott. You know, he's everything looks great. Then all of a sudden, I tune into the game, Scott, and they said Zion will not be playing. But Scott, the report says return to competition reconditioning. So then I stand up in my house, Scott, and I said, wait a minute. What did they just say? Return to competition reconditioning. So I'm inviting the league now to the show. In addition to Bobo, I'm inviting the league to explain. I'm not going to call.
Well, Zion spoke about this in an interview a couple
and then
weeks ago.
And then he plays last night.
And it was 24-9-6.
In Utah, right, where the altitude is what up there, right? So I don't know what's going on. So I'm inviting.
So Zion spoke about this.
I'm inviting the league to the show to explain this, and we need we need someone from the league office, because our audience demands that, you know, we get it right.
Ooh.
We don't want to be those guys who are just saying things about the players without knowing the facts. I've never heard of this. I don't even know what that means, but that's what they said. So I need the league office for an explanation. Our audience needs a legal. Remember, Scotty, how the Electrifying Mojo used to have send you cards. They would send you cards to certify the audience. Okay.
Electrifying Mojo.
Electrifying Mojo. Everybody in Detroit understands who that is.
Is exactly.
Well, when I heard that, I said, I'm going to now pass out, Mo, cards to make our audience authentic. Because, Mo, I did not know what that was, the reconditioning thing. I didn't know that explanation. Okay. But we need to know what's going on here.
But Zion said that he would love to play in back-to-backs. However, the team does not allow him to play in back-to-backs. So whatever explanation they put, it feels like they just put a new explanation up each time. Because now you can't purposely rest players like that. You've got to come up with something on the injury report.
We need an explanation. Our audience needs an explanation.
I feel like though, the explanation I need regarding the New Orleans Pelicans isn't so much that. The explanation I need is who the hell is on the medical staff in New Orleans, right? Because Zion's injuries have been well documented. Okay, well documented. But then you have Herb Jones, who now out with injury. When Brandon Ingram was there, he was frequently injured. You have Brandon Boston, who's always injured. You had Jose Alvarado. You had Trey Murphy, who came back from injury. It seems like every single player who ever plays for the New Orleans Pelicans undergoes somewhat serious injury. So I just want to know who is the team doctor and the medical staff and so on and so forth. That's going on in New Orleans. I also want to know who the hell is on the medical staff in Philadelphia, because we didn't even talk about Joel Embiid having to go to the owner of the team directly to let him know the situation with his knee and that he didn't want to play the rest of the season. And then I also read something about the Sixers, Tyrese Maxey having a broken finger, and so they were trying to teach him to shoot with three fingers instead of five, and so he went out there and shot 0 from 5. And I just don't know what's going on in a lot of these teams. I don't know. And I wish I could explain this to the audience.
What does that mean? What does that mean with Joel Embiid? What does that mean? Like, what do you mean?
So he shut down for the season now.
So, but why did he have to go to the owner? Like, what does that mean? Like,
that's what I'm saying. I don't know, because that's not a normal thing. You know what I mean? I don't know if you guys have experienced this. Your best player going over the medical staff and the front office and the coaches and going straight to the owner to tell them directly about what's going on. I don't know if that's a common thing in the league.
Well, hold on. When it comes to medical things and someone says they have something going on, so are we saying, I want to make sure I'm understanding, are we saying the medical staff and everyone else says nothing's wrong with them? What are we saying here?
This is what I'm saying is I don't know. That's why I need to I need to find out. You know what I'm saying? Like the New Orleans Pelicans and the Philadelphia 76ers, they're medical teams. I'm sure you guys are great people. But what the hell are you doing? Scott, do you have any insight from working in, you know, these front offices?
That's a little unique. I mean, because the normal chain of command is I or someone like me would be having that discussion, obviously, with the owner, keeping him abreast the whole time about what is the status of Joel Embiid and, you know, why he's able to play or not able to play and what we have done. And so that there needs to be a clear communication path from GM or president to owner. Again, not being in Philadelphia, it's obvious that Joel must have some sort of individual relationship with the owner. And he, from what it sounds like, again, I don't know, probably just felt compelled that he wanted the owner to hear from himself directly what was going on to make sure that, you know, I guess that he's being represented right and that he's done everything in his power to try to come back this year and it's not going to be able to work this year. And he's going to, you know, do everything he can to come back the following year. Because the reality of the situation is this. The two are stuck together. I don't know that you can find a trade partner right now. And I hesitate in saying that in the NBA because historically this has been disproven. When people say, oh, it's an untradeable deal or contract, you find a way. There's always been a way to initiate a trade. But in this situation, because of the public injury history, and he's a tremendous talent, so it has nothing to do with his talent. I just don't know what organization will take on the number of years that he has left on his contract, given the number of injuries, surgeries, et cetera, that he has. So the two of them are going to be stuck together. So they've got to figure out a way to make the best of it. And so, you know, maybe from Joel's perspective, this is his way of trying to do that. And, you know, from ownership's perspective and listening to him, that's, you know, how they see it. So we'll see again. But I haven't been a part of that type of dynamic, but doesn't mean that it's never happened before in the NBA either.
Yeah, it is a very strange situation. Well, this episode was all about invitations. Anyone who knows why Bol Bol's not playing, mm-hmm. feel free to come on the show. Anyone who knows why Zion can't play back-to-backs, feel free to come on the show. Anyone who knows why Embiid and the Philadelphia 76ers can't ever be healthy, feel free to come on the show. BJ, anyone else you want to invite while we're still here?
Yeah. Well, it's one thing that our audience demands. They, you know, hey, we're not here to... for all the so-called hot takes, and we're not here tearing down, we just want to get to the bottom of it. So out of respect to the game, let's allow the league office just to explain to us what reconditioning or whatever it's called.
Yeah. The night after a triple-double, right?
Yeah, the night after a triple-double. You know, the night after a triple-double, all of a sudden, you know, it comes on my television, competition reconditioning. I need to know what that is. Now, Scott, I've been around a little bit.
Yeah, I've never heard that one before. That's a new one to me. So when you said
and then... you know, then he goes to Utah and then he plays. Okay. So return to competition reconditioning. We need to know what that is. We're just going to invite the league office, explain to us what's going on, and we're going to keep the train moving as we always do. But we are patiently waiting. The league office, we just want to know what that is. Please feel free. We're going to just turn the mic over to you, explain to what it is, and then we'll go on with our daily routine here at the Hoop Genius Podcast. Okay, and then we can go from there.
All right. Well, that's another episode. Subscribe to the show. Use your Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcast from. And we look forward to having all of these questions answered very soon. Scott, appreciate you coming on the show as always. BJ, appreciate you. And we'll be back tomorrow with more. So until then, get buckets.